The Athletic.
Totally Football League Show, talking Sheffield's negative corona test, Jimmy Max Latic's comeback, Hamer's Howlers, FGR's XG, and how to lose friends and alienate people with Nigel Clough.
And as you can probably tell, I'm a little bit angry, Steve, at the moment, so we have to be careful what we say.
This is the Totally Football League Show in association with Paddy Power. Ready for some EFL chat, listener? Then you're in the right place. I'm Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined this week by Sam Parkin.
Hello, Matt.
Adrian Clarke is also on board.
Howdy.
And it's the first run out of the season for the most prolific podcaster of this parish, Flo Lloyd Hughes. Hi, Flo.
Yeah, hello. I was saying to Abby, producer Abby, actually, a few weeks ago that if there's some kind of like dot-com bubble podcast crash equivalent, I am well and truly screwed, because that's probably accounts for about 90% of my income at the moment. So let's pray that people enjoy listening to podcasts for the next, I don't know, 10 years at least.
We're all hoping that, Flo. We are all hoping that. Only 2-0 in the EFL this weekend. Let's get some favourite goals. Adrian, you can go first.
Oh, yeah, tough one. I think that, do you know what? Even though I admired the champagne football at Stoke with the time on goal, it was glorious, very un-Stoke-like. My favourite goal was actually Joel Perreault for Swansea, the rebound.
On his stronger left foot, and he's denied by the post. On the ball, and he scores!
Off the post, following it in, and just without even thinking about it, he just crisply side-footed it into the opposite corner. That was class. That he made that look really, really easy, and it's not. So yeah, Joel Perreault for me, and of course it was the winner.
Yeah, pretty embarrassing if you're a Swansea midfielder and one of Bristol City's posts has got more assists than you this season, I would guess. How about you, Flo?
Oh, it's got to be West Brom's first goal, that Mowat volley, and the fact that they scored in the first minute. I just think that was my favourite so far of the season. I think, like, start as you mean to go on. But, I mean, not a QPR goal, obviously. I think Rob Dickey's goal against Mills, definitely my goal of the season so far. But, yeah, that was a brilliant, brilliant goal.
Mowat on the volley, and yeah, corner. What a start for West Bromwich Albion.
Sam?
I'm going for Donovan Wilson, Sutton Ooh. United. And my reasoning, love the Mowat goal, love the Tyman goal. They could have quite easily got it. I think the difficulty factor was just incredible with the Sutton goal. It was like a volley. It was a flick, if you haven't seen it. Cut back, and it flashes past the keeper like he's struck a volley. So I wouldn't have been able to do that. I could have executed the other two. I think Tyman's finish probably had to go in the top corner for me to be the best. Do you know what I mean? It was a little bit of a scrappy finish because he fell over as well. Amazing goal. And Mowat's obviously goes in every now and again, you know, in training and what have you. So I just think Wilson's was just insane. He must have incredible flexibility or something.
Yeah. And I always love it as well when a player who didn't get on well at a club goes back there and does the business. And Andy Cook, even though it was a kind of a tap-in, just the sort of sheer joy on his face at scoring that winning goal. That was a highlight.
Yeah, big Sam Klukas energy to that one. I'll chuck in Mustafa Karail with the free kick for Gillingham, because it was a good goal, but also because we were so mean to Gillingham on Thursday that I feel like we need to start making reparations toward them. Okay, let's championship, shall we?
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Championship headlines. Fulham lead the way. They're ahead of WBA on GD at the top of the table. Blackpool and QPR prove 2-0 is the most dangerous lead as they fight back against Bournemouth and Barnsley. Bristol City continue to find the Ashton greats as their wait for a home win goes on, whilst Preston managed to get off the mark, leaving Nottingham Forest as the only pointless team after four fixtures. And under transfers, Mark Sensible, Bournemouth have signed Gary Cahill. First to Bramall Lane, where Sheffield United's early season woes continued. They were beaten by near neighbours Huddersfield. Late goals, the theme in this one. Josh Caroma had Huds ahead with 15 to go, but when Billy Sharp plundered a stoppage time leveller, the talk was of turning points. But it turned out Town weren't done. On loan, Levi Colwill quickly fired in his first goal in senior football. Flo Slavisa-Jokanović had a poor start at Fulham too, so he might not be getting too concerned. But this is worrying if you're a Sheffield United supporter, walloped at West Brom and then beaten by a team expected to be down amongst the deadmen.
Yeah, I think the next couple of days in the lead up to end of the transfer window are going to be really big. There's a good piece on The Athletic by Richard Sutcliffe, who covers Sheffield United, about what they've got to do in the next couple of days and the players and bodies they've got to bring in order to help him, because there hasn't been enough transfer activity. There is a very clear hangover in that squad, that a relegation hangover, and they've got to do something about it. And they have an issue with forward players at the moment in terms of combinations that are going to work, who's the best option. I think, you know, Billy Sharp, although he's obviously a great ambassador for the club and still, you know, cares, he I don't think he's at that level anymore, and they've tried lots of other options as well, and it's who they're gonna look at to come in. And Richard Sutcliffe talks about perhaps giving Illiman Ndeo a chance, who had been really good for the under-23s, got double digits for them last season, and had a very brief loan spell in the National League. So they need to do something, because it's not looking very good at the moment.
Sam, would it be difficult for them to justify buying another striker, given that they've got McBurney, Brewster and Sharp already on the books, or will it just be needs must?
I think it probably would be. I'd still fancy them to gain some confidence and them to strike on a pairing that could be hot in the Championship. I suppose that depends on resources. For me, looking at the team, looking at that performance, I think it's that link between midfield and attack where they could really do with some flair, some attacking creativity. I think, you know, three really good players in there, Berg, Norwood and Fleck, who did some really good things in the Premier League. But I just think that player to get in between the lines, they're lacking. It can't all be on the shoulders always of the front players. Of course, they have to carry a large burden. But I think I saw enough in the performance really at the weekend to suggest that this is going to turn around for them. Davies and Norrington Davies, you know, not played many minutes. They were good. They'll improve. I thought Egan and Basham in their preferred system were back to their best. And obviously Davies will get there with a few more minutes. So I think a lot to like in defeat. But yeah, that conundrum going forward, that's the thing that's glaringly obvious to me at the moment, that they're just lacking a bit of creativity as well and a bit one-dimensional. Dean Ashton spoke about all those balls into the box at the weekend, which is great, but you have to have other ways of breaking teams down.
Adrian, classic big club bias from me to focus on Sheffield United first rather than the team that actually won the game. So we ought to say some nice things about Huddersfield.
We should, yeah. I mean, back-to-back wins for the first time in 8 months. So they'll be cock-a-hoop. And they've done that playing quite badly for the two games. I mean, they were two poor games. Obviously, they won a scrappy one against Preston. And then for this game, the first hour, the shot count was 0-14. So that's why Sam's right about it wasn't a disastrous performance. They kind of dominated Sheffield United. And he's bang on about having that someone different to pop up with a goal from midfield or to unlock the door. That's definitely the player that they're missing. But no, from a Huddersfield point of view, let's credit Corbran. We kind of battered him the other day saying he's had long enough to get things right and to implement this style, but his changes made a difference. And in the final half an hour, they had five shots, scored two goals, double substitution, made a heck of a difference. Went to three up front. Fraser Campbell came on, moved Karoma from the middle to the left. All of these little moves turned out to be, you know, they worked. So yeah, well played, Corbran. Well done, Huddersfield. But yeah, I think performance levels do need to rise for Huddersfield to find consistency in the Championship.
I think also Huddersfield really need to make the most of this spell, because obviously you've already talked on this podcast about how they probably were going to struggle this season, and they've got a fairly decent run now to continue and get some really important points to the board. They've got Everton in the Cup tomorrow, but then they've got Reading at home. You've lost three of their opening four. They've got Stoke away. That'll be tricky, but they've got Blackpool away and then Forest at home. So Matt, I think you'll know how that might go. So I think it's a really good opportunity for them to get some crucial points that come the end of the season might be the things that keep them up, especially, like Adrian said, if they're actually not playing that well.
Now then, we chided Birmingham for their off-the-field antics on our last pod, but we can do nothing but shower the Blues with praise for what they accomplished across the white line on Saturday, namely a 5-0 tonking of Luton at Kenilworth Road. Sam, I was interested to hear Lee Bowyer call this the best performance of any team that he's managed.
Yeah, probably a bit carried away, wasn't he? Just having witnessed the 90 minutes and being asked the question straight off the bat. So, yeah, on reflection, I sometimes the scoreline can flatter it as well, can't it? I suppose as well. But yeah, to get a clean sheet, not too much surprise. Expect them to be, you know, difficult to score against once Lee Bowyer got his methods in place. But you don't associate Birmingham City with being free scoring, clearly. Certainly not in the last few seasons. So, you know, what an impact that Chong has made in particular on loan from Manchester United. Bit of a free role it looks like he's got, supporting Hogan and Jukovic. Important for Hogan to get back scoring. Means that the burden is not solely on the head of Jukovic. So some really good performances and forced Luton into an early change in this game. Probably too late from Nathan Jones, already 2-0 down when he kind of ripped up his idea to go with a back three, which, bit of a surprise considering they've only got slim pickings in that department. So a little bit surprised at the way Luton went about it, but credit Birmingham for what was a brilliant, complete performance.
Yeah, a friend of mine was in the Birmingham end and he says that it's the best performance he's seen in years. He didn't think that Lee Bowyer was over egging it at all. He just said it was just fantastic from back to front. The back three were brilliant. The whole team defended well as a unit. And then when they sprung forward, they did it with real zest and energy and skill. And in Tahit Chong, it was a stunning performance, phenomenal. And he reminds me a little bit of Jesse Lingard. Obviously, the Manchester United factor is there. He's not a kid either, is he? He's in his early 20s now. And he's just got that vibrancy about him, as he can run with the ball at pace, he can pop up in good positions, he's got excellent end product. He could do for Birmingham City what Jesse Lingard did for West Ham last season, and that will really excite Birmingham fans. And yeah, I just think that he's building a really balanced team. Nice with the wing-backs as well. You've got Bella, who's a winger, and Collan, the other side, who's more of a full-back. So it kind of balances out, even though they've got three at the back. When Bella's forward, it can turn into a four. And in midfield, I like the partnership of Sundjic and Woods. I think they're really solid. So, yeah, Bowie's doing a cracking job, in my opinion.
Flo, I wonder if you can help me figure out Luton, because I'm not really sure what to make of them. Four league games so far, clean sheets in two of them, 8 goals conceded in the other two. It's patchy, to put it mildly.
Yeah, and I'm surprised, because I actually thought they had a good chance of kind of pushing on this season and potentially threatening for the playoffs. I've been surprised with kind of how inconsistent they've been, but it's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back from this, because it could be that they get themselves onto a good run after suffering a heavy defeat like this and it forces them to make a few changes. But yeah, it's obviously a pretty humbling result to experience.
Now, as Sam will tell you, the 26th of January marks Liberation Day in Uganda. It's also the last time that Bristol City won at Ashton Gate. Their winless home run now extends to 12 games. On Friday night, Joel Pirro got the only goal of the match to hand Russell Martin his first league win as Swan in chief. He was a bit miffed though, Flo. He said, being brutally honest, I didn't like some of it. I think it's the worst we've been with the ball. Classic reverse psychology is the only thing I can put that down to.
Yeah, and I think they were lucky to get away with it at times. I think Bristol City looked better. I've had a look at the stats on this, and it was probably one of the better games that they've played. Most amounts of shots on target they've had all season. But they just haven't got enough firepower, I think, and that's the issue. I think, you know, when you've got Naki Wells kind of aimlessly crossing balls in, I don't think you're really utilising your players to the best of their ability, and I think they are going to really struggle this season. And it's hard to see how they're going to get themselves out of the kind of sunken place that they're in right now.
Sam, you're our striking expert. Joel Pirro, he's filling the IU-shaped hole pretty impressively for Swansea so far.
Yeah, and a lovely, cultured left foot that he possesses as well, like Michu and Ayu before him, and completely agree with Adrian. Really kind of took my breath away a little bit, the composure, the way he was able to control the second one. It was quite a peculiar first effort, whether he'd spotted that there was that gap at the near post, because it wasn't struck with particular venom. It was really nicely placed, and then, yeah, the reaction was great, but then to control it takes some doing from that type of distance. So it was a really good goal. Just thinking about your question to Flo, Matt, I don't know if Russell Martins was being like that potentially because it's the longest I've seen his team play, in terms of they were playing from back to front a little bit more when they were put under pressure, because obviously he doesn't really want that. So I don't know if he adapted his game plan for this one, or the players were just under pressure and panicked a little bit. I mean, the passes were certainly down on the last few performances, and the amount of long passes were up. So you don't know what's gone on when they're leading into the game, but it felt to me it's not exactly how Russell Martin wants his team to play. But did he just sacrifice in this kind of, I suppose it's a bit of a derby, isn't it? There's a bit of disdain between the supporters, and you know, Friday night under the lights, it was a battle, and they were fortunate because, as Flo said, Bristol City probably should have had their noses in front.
What are Bristol City, and more specifically Nigel Pearson, going to do about this home form, Clarke? It's woeful, to put it mildly. I mean, they've got Preston visiting next, which looks like a decent game to get back on the horse as far as winning goes. But they've also got Fulham and Bournemouth coming to town in the next sequence of home games. So he's going to be under genuine pressure, even though he's only newish to the job.
Yeah, he will be under pressure because expectations are high, aren't they, at Bristol City? I think they're a good team. You know, they've got lots of excellent players, and in many respects, they're playing better this season than they were last season. They're definitely playing a more front-footed style. They're creating more opportunities. I like the look of the young player, Alex Scott, who's come in. He's only 17, and they've snapped him up on a new long-term deal. So he's a name to sort of keep your eye on. For me, they need something different up front. A couple of their strikers, I think Martin and Vyman, were out for a long time. So that's a problem. Naki Wells, I think they want to get rid of, judging by some of the comments that I've seen. So they need a different type of striker. You know, Martin and Vyman, experienced, decent enough finishers, but there's not electric pace there anymore. There's not great height. And I think Jeju was their alternative, wasn't he, last season? A proper number nine. So I think that's surely what they'll be in the market for between now and the end of the window. And then maybe with a number nine, with that front-footed style, creating the chances, they'll score some cheap goals. Just at the far stick, bang. You know, it climbs above the last defender, back of the net. That, I think, is what's missing at the moment.
All right, let's build a midweek accumulator bet with Paddy Power using the League Cup as our basis. Producer Abby's going to help us with this. I'm going to go first. Abby, I'll have Wolves to be winning at half-time and full-time against my beleaguered Nottingham Forest on Tuesday, please.
Surprised you're not going for a Forest win there, Matt. But anyway, to get your Wolves winning at half-time and full-time, that is 23-10. Incidentally, that is the same as a draw in this game. Looking at the odds overall, though, Wolves are the favourites here, even though they are the away side. They're
also in the Premier League. Steady on.
Yes, fair point. They come in at evens, and Forest are 14-5.
All right, great. Let's head to League One next.
Ah, the summer was fun, wasn't it? No allegiances, everyone getting behind England, Three Lions being sung everywhere. But now the Premier League is back, get Grealish off the bench, he can stay on it at City. Pickford might have been a safe pair of hands, now he's just a pair. And enough of Jules Rimet dreaming, now it's our turn to dream. So kiss goodbye to that vomit-inducing unity and welcome back proper football. Let's celebrate flair on the grass, not a flare up the... Paddy Power! 18+, begambleaware.org.
Because you're a listener of the Totally Football League Show, you can get a third off an Athletic subscription right now. All you need to do is head to theathletic.com/league show, and you could read pieces from the likes of Ryan Conway, Nancy Frostick, Steve Madeley, and many, many more writers. That's theathletic.com/league show.
League One headlines, three teams have 10 points. They are Sheffield Wednesday, Portsmouth and Wickham. Accrington Stanley have now won four in a row in all competitions. Five teams in the division are yet to record a victory. And in obvious statements, Paul Cook says Ipswich are a work in progress. He was right, there are no duck eggs in this division. Let's start with Rotherham nil, Sheffield Wednesday 2. Is it just me or does Sheffield Wednesday play a derby every week? The latest such match saw them win 2-0 at the home of the Millers. Abby wants to know if Bailey Peacock Farrell is your favourite player with a bird in their name. I would say more pertinently, Clarkie, is to talk about his penalty save and what a good acquisition he's been and how Sheffield Wednesday, this crisis club of last season, all of a sudden looked to be a totally different prospect.
Yeah, look, we said that the biggest asset for Sheffield Wednesday this season would be Darren Moore. And I think that we're seeing what he can bring to the table when he's fit and available on the training ground every week. He's organised them really well and the recruitment has been good. Peacock Farrell is a funny one because I thought he was pretty good for Leeds when they were flying high at the top end of the Championship. One or two little errors and you thought, well, yeah, of all the positions they could maybe strengthen, it's maybe in goal because he's young. But I don't think he ever let them down. So it's a good pickup.
Get those tapes. Play back those tapes of me and Adrian slaughtering him from 2 years ago. Telling you.
He had a couple, didn't he? No, I didn't think he was that bad. But yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I've got a selective memory. but look, he's doing the business at the moment. That was a great penalty save. And it wasn't the only save he made in the game. Got to also give credit to the guys in front of him. Dunkley and Iorfa. Now, these two weren't available very often, were they, in the Championship last season? Had they been, I think Sheffield Wednesday, as mediocre as they were, might not have gone down because Dunkley and Iorfa, for me, is a Championship level partnership, and they did really well. And another key, I think, in this game was Luongo coming back in. I mean, he's not the easiest on the eye, but he puts himself about and he will protect.
And Sam's, Sam is mouth to the floor.
Go on, Sam. He's
majestic. He's a lovely player to watch. He puts in a hard challenge, but he doesn't kind of, you know, pound along the pitch. Like, he's very smooth and kind of, I don't know, I'm trying to demonstrate my arms, which isn't great.
I was going to say graceful podcast, flow, but I'm watching what you're doing
graceful,
on the Zoom and it's not that graceful. So.
That's the word.
I've forgotten what he's like then because he hasn't played for so long.
Do you know what, Adrian?
I just remember him as a stopper.
He's brilliant at breaking down play. He's one of the best, you know, players to do that, and he doesn't get you a lot of goals, but he's so good in the middle of the park and he's very composed on the ball. Like, very confident and assured on the ball, but he's not messy. He's not ugly.
For some reason, he's one of those midfield players that has been transformed from a silky number 10, essentially, early on in his career, to a tough tackler. So I know why you think that, Adrian, and Flo's right. He does break up the play brilliantly, but he's got loads more in his armoury. So I'd be really frustrated if I was in that dressing room on the training ground going, do what you used to do when you were younger, get forward and get goals and go past people, because he's got great ability. But you're spot on, Adrian, so I'm not having a go.
No, I wasn't. I got it wrong. It's fine.
Most dribbles, best passing accuracy, most tackles.
Put it in the tapes.
There you go. We've covered all bases because he was the best at everything at the weekend.
And he's just mad that he's in League One, to be honest. I mean, he's way too... Same with Peacock Farrell, to be honest. I think a lot of players in Sheffield Wednesday's team, you're like, you are way too good to be playing in this division, which is obviously brilliant for them, brilliant for the fans. And I think it's always nice, a bit like Birmingham, you know, when fans have gone through it for a very solid amount of time and it's been just a consistent downward spiral. I think it's great to have, you know, really positive season. And I know, having known a lot of Sheffield Wednesday fans, that's the one thing that they were looking forward to, is actually winning some games and playing well, especially being back at Hillsborough. So I think that's probably the only good thing about being relegated, is you might actually see your team do well in the division for the first time in a very long time.
All right, that's something for me to look
forward
to.
So good luck to you, mate.
Next season. Yeah, great. Sam, Rotherham, I'm not that worried about them at the moment. They lost by two here, but generally their defeats have been narrow. They have got a win on the board. Are they just taking their time to find their feet again in League One?
Yeah, I think they'll be relatively satisfied with the start to the season. I think they're a bit short in options in the forward line. You know, Michael Smith, again, is going to come under pressure to get the goals. I think they do share the goals around. It looked to me that they probably just shaded it, but not in terms of chances. Adrian's like bang on there. 34 crosses Rotherham put in, and I think Dominic Iofa repelled 12 of them. So him and the other centre half were brilliant, and they lost a little bit when Ogben went off early, I think it was. So that was a bit of a problem. Sadly, came on and obviously had his penalty saved. So I don't think there was too much wrong. I just think the cutting edge, they could maybe do with something more in that department. So I wouldn't be surprised if they took someone on loan in the next week.
And meanwhile, Wigan were victorious at the Valley. They made it 4 defeats on the spin for Charlton in all comps. Late goals here, Tendai Dariqua striking with 88 minutes played, and then James McLean marking his second Latics debut with the second goal in stoppage time. Clarkie, we love these Nigel Adkins motivational videos. He's right, walking is brilliant, but he might get his walking papers if this carries on much longer.
Yeah, the natives, I think, are getting restless. The owner, obviously, with his guitar, was very sort of bullish, and he's talked, you know, he's inflated the expectations. He's got high hopes for Charlton's future, hasn't he? He sees them at a much higher level, and they've had one shot on target over two games. So that is killed the enthusiasm, hasn't it, among the supporters. Charlie Kirk had some, he was sharp in flashes, I think, in this game, and they weren't all bad. I think they bossed a lot of the second half, but they got done at the end. A little bit of a sucker punch from Wigan, who basically showed why they're potentially a better bet than Charlton for the playoffs this season, because they've got that depth on the bench to be able to bring on McLean, Massey, Humphreys. I mean, that's great firepower in League One, isn't it? Goodness me. And I think that's maybe where Charlton are falling short. And that's why the supporters are wanting Nigel Adkins and the board to bring in some more bodies.
Great firepower for Wigan, Flo. But also, we've spoken a few times about various clubs and managers having a lot on their plate in terms of integrating a whole bunch of new players. Doesn't seem that much of a problem for Liam Richardson and Wigan.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's not easy, and it can work in the opposite way as well. I think he's mastered it very quickly, and I think Wigan have a really good chance of going up as well. I mean, I watched Charlton play Wimbledon in the League Cup, and they lost 1-0, and it was pretty abysmal. So I think a lot of teams are going to go to the Valley this season and see that as a big opportunity to get points on the board. But yeah, as you say, with a lot of changes, with lots of other clubs struggling to get those players bedded in, it's impressive to see what he's done.
Are Wigan still dark horses, Sam, or are they, I don't know, bright donkeys now?
Yeah, they're better than dark horses, I would say. I think I actually called them that a couple of weeks ago, so that was my bad.
What, bright donkeys?
No, dark horses. they're a good side. Just looking at the 11 now, actually, and thinking in terms of the recruitment, you know, signing players, you know, Power, Jones, Wyke, that were all at Sunderland last season, signing Naylor and Watmore that were both at Pompey. Maybe there's something in that. And then there's obviously the collection of players that were at Wigan last year. So maybe he's not had as much to do as some other managers. You know, I'm clutching a little bit there, trying to think as to why they're doing pretty well at this stage. But, you know, of those players, I thought Watmore was exceptional. Again, like that bench that Clarkie mentions, to bring on Humphreys and McLean now as well. Another player who knows the club well, McLean, so that's a great bit of business. I thought Jones was a threat as well. So, yeah, they've got the strength in depth that Charlton clearly haven't got. And like, I think, Sheffield United, I spoke of a few moments ago, that's what Charlton need. I think someone to connect the midfield and the attack. Albie Morgan, I think, played there at the weekend and was a little bit short. And also, I can't question the two centre-halves and the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper made some brilliant saves, McGivory, but the two full-backs, Matthews and especially Gunter playing left-back at the moment, we know how good Charlie Kirk was with Pickering bombing on and how he needs people linking in the final third. If they could add a little bit more quality, maybe at full-back and also in midfield, he'll surely prosper. So they need to get some players in Charlton, and I'd expect them to be looking at some quality loans from Premier League clubs would probably be my guess.
I think also, just jump in as well, I think also that's the issue for a lot of teams is at this stage in the window, for a lot of them, the only option is some Premier League loanees. And if they're coming into League One, the opposite issue that Wigan have, if they haven't got that experience of playing that division, it is going to take time for them to settle. Whereas Wigan have, like Sam said, got recruited well in terms they've got a lot of players who have already played at this level. And I think there's going to be a bit of kind of panic stations. I mean, Wimbledon's a team I cover a lot, and they rely heavily on loanees from Premier League teams who haven't played at this level before, and it does take them a while to bed into it. They have the skill level, but it's hard for them to match that up with the physicality and the kind of disruptive pace, I think, that comes with it. And I think it does take a lot of players a while to get up to speed.
Yeah, I think there might be a few clubs as well finding out if they're thinking they're depending on getting loans from Premier League players. Well, most of the good ones have already been loaned out, so you might not be able to stock up with the kind of quality you're looking for. Cambridge United got their first win on their return to the third tier, albeit with a large slice of good fortune. Deflected first goal and then two own goals from Tom Hamer. Clarke, you ever played with somebody who scored more than one own goal in a game? How are you reacting to that if it's a teammate of yours? I'm assuming you've never done it, obviously.
I can't remember. No, I didn't score an own goal. No, gave away some penalties in my time, which was upsetting. Lost sleep over that, but no, not an own goal. Yeah, it must be such a downer for Hamer there. It was really unlucky, wasn't it? I mean, Burton, didn't they have 19 shots, I think, to Cambridge's 7? And obviously, yeah, big deflection, two own goals. But let's give Cambridge a bit of credit. And I'll tell you why I want to give them extra credit here. They've been to Accrington and Plymouth in the last 7 days. And I mean, that is some miles. And Cambridge United, they won't be staying in luxury places. They might have even gone up on the day on one of the games. That is an arduous week. And then they clicked into gear in the second half, even though they were up against it. And came up with some great goals. Obviously, Houlihan again to the fore. So yeah, well done to Cambridge. And I do think, I know I probably said this last year, but Mark Bonnet, he gets balance. And I think balance is such an important thing in a team. And with 4-4-2, he's got two, you know, nice rounded fullbacks in Iredale and Williams. He's got a front two, Smith and Ironside in this particular game. Brophy and Houlihan, nippy little wide men that like to jink inside as well. There's a nice balance to that team, and for that reason, I think they'd be hard to beat.
Sam, I can picture you kind of flicking one past your own keeper from a corner. Would that be the only own goal you ever scored? Am I just totally making that up?
Don't think I did, which is a miracle considering I hated defending corners and free kicks more than anything in the professional game. Just trudging back there as a striker when you're knackered, thinking, why have I got to go on their best header of the ball when I've spent my whole career trying to get away from defenders? It doesn't make any sense. I hated it. I just used to grab them and hope. Ah, dreadful. So like you, Clarkie, I think I'd given away a few penalties. I remember giving away one for Luton late on, just grabbing someone, just couldn't make a challenge. And Mick Harford absolutely ruined me after the game. Absolutely destroyed me. What are you doing? Because he was probably the master in both 18-yard boxes. But yeah, own goal was not for me. And given everything Clarke said and everything I've read and watched over the weekend, I think I'm putting this down as a bit of a freak. As content that Cambridge will be with their start, and they've done brilliantly. And I love Ironside. I've heard from players that have played in League Two in the last 12 months that he is an absolute handful. And we knew he was a great partner for Mullin last year. I think he still goes under the radar. So they got a good striker there. They got a good manager, got a set way of playing, and that sprinkling of gold dust with Houlihan. But I think Burton will come again. And it looked like O'Connor going off. Yes, he was replaced well as well by Borthwick Jackson. But I think they've had three defensive midfielders go down now this season. So that reorganisation maybe had an impact. And I can't see that happening too often. Conceded three goals. That's just twice in the last 24 games. So, yeah, I'd imagine Burton will be back with a clean sheet in the next game or two.
Yeah, all right. Well, sympathies to Tom Hamer. He didn't do the full Walters of two own goals and a missed pen in the same game. It just goes to show you, Flo, doesn't it? We talked about League One being ridiculously tight and impossible to call this season. This defeat for Burton comes after back-to-back wins against Ipswich and Sunderland. We know Jimmy doesn't suffer fools gladly, so you imagine there was some paint being stripped off the wall in the dressing room at full-time on Saturday.
Well, I hope not, because like Adrian and Sam said, I think it really was just like a freak accident. They also lost Tom O'Connor in the first half. Looks like he pulled a hamstring, so he's going to be out for probably at least 4 weeks. I mean, it was just one of those days where everything that could potentially go wrong went wrong. So I hope on reflection he kind of looks at that and thinks it probably won't be that bad again. I mean, Wimbledon have conceded back-to-back deflected goals to really kind of change the result of their games. And this was in a similar scenario where you're just really unlucky and they could have scored a couple and they dominated the first half especially. So I think on reflection, it's probably not going to be this bad, hopefully, I think, for them for a long time in this season.
While you're there, Flo, give us your pick for Akka, please.
So, kind of a rogue one, I guess. I mean, I did want to go Huddersfield to beat Everton on penalties, but can't really do that. So I'm going to go for the draw, but just know that I want Huddersfield to win on penalties. But we'll go for the draw technically on the Akka.
What's that going to come in at, Abby?
Yeah, so the draw comes in at 3-1, which is actually more likely than a Huddersfield win. So good little bet to go for there, Flo. But Everton are the heavy favourites here at 6-10.
All right, we'll complete that with Sam and Adrian's picks soon. Next, though, League Two.
This is the Totally Football League Show from The Athletic. Keep up to date with everything Totally by following us at The Totally Show on Twitter.
League Two headlines. Rochdale's new owners have abandoned their takeover after an investigation was launched into the acquisition of the club. A good weekend all round for Dale, who picked up their first league win of the campaign too. Newport boss Mike Flynn has tested positive for COVID. He missed Saturday's game and will also sit out the next two. Joey Barton's added Kevin Bond to his Bristol Rovers coaching staff after the departure of Clint Hill. On the pitch, Exeter went from 0-4 goals in 24 minutes. Glenn Whelan is training with Bristol Rovers, by the way, in other Bristol Rovers news. Everyone loves a touchline scuffle. See Swindon against Salford. Gary Bowyer shoving over a Swindon player. But the last line goes to the pitch invasion at Oldham after their 2-1 loss to Colchester, leaving them rock bottom of the Football League. Unsurprisingly, we're talking about goal fests in League Two this week. We'll start at Field Mill. Two probable promotion contenders squaring off as Mansfield hosted Bradford. It was the Bantams who continued their free scoring form, adding another 3 to the 4 they got in midweek to run out 3-2 winners against the Stags. Nigel Clough's post-match interview, one of the main talking points here. Let's have a listen to what the Son of God had to say.
And as you can probably tell, I'm a little bit angry, Steve, at the moment. So we're going to have to be careful what we say. But very, very disappointed. Probably picked the wrong team today. Should have played Kel Gordon, brought him back in at home. Probably a mistake on my part.
Why, in retrospect, would you have put Kellen Gordon back in at right fullback?
I think Elliot Hewitt used to play at Grimsby, the lad that scored and then made the third goal. And he's obviously very good friends with him because he's not tackled him all game.
Flo, that's an absolute dream, isn't it? If you're doing the interview there and a manager gives you a line like that, you're just kind of agog saying, tell me more, Nigel.
Yeah, it was pretty classic. And actually, it was what Sam was saying of his experiences at Luton. I'm surprised he didn't get accusations of being too friendly with the opposition there. Because I just think of all the things that you could hear from afterwards your manager talking about you, I think that's pretty embarrassing. That's probably one of the worst. So I'm sure he's going to be kind of looking over his shoulder now for the rest of the season because he knows he's being watched because, yeah, that's pretty embarrassing. I think it's at the level of refs who obviously get upset when you kind of accuse them of being in the pocket of the opposition or whatever. I think that's pretty bad.
Presumably, Sam, he knows the character of the player that he's criticised and knows what kind of reaction he will get to him because you want to use that kind of tactic on the right person rather than it backfiring. Or was he just angry post-match and ranting?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure about that, Matt. Like, I smiled, but keep it in the dressing room. Nige, that's my opinion on it. That said, it's tricky because if they're really good friends... If I'd have played against a really good mate, would I have gone in and when I had the opportunity to smash them, would I have gone as aggressively as I maybe would have done to some random opposing player? I probably wouldn't have. But you're going to be as professional as you need to be, if that makes sense.
It wasn't even about smashing. It's just he didn't even bother. He gave him like, you know,
I don't agree with that, Flo. No one's not going to bother in a match. I'm just saying you're maybe going to...
Try.
You're maybe gonna not stick an elbow on one of your best mates.
But
professional pride's gonna take over. I've never known that, you know, in my teams. So listen, he got something wrong because he should have whipped him, shouldn't he? And I don't even think Hewitt's best position is right back. So why didn't he make the change and bring on Gordon? You know, I know that it's a tricky job and you're juggling with injuries. Maris went off, which was a big reason for the defeat as well. So you're constantly having to box clever with your substitution. So that's what Nigel Clough would probably point towards. But he's obviously picked the wrong team. And they've made headway down the left-hand side. But I feel a little bit sorry, you know, for the lad, because everyone's talking about him this week and everyone's laughing at him, in essence, and he'll probably feel like crap this morning. So
I wonder if, yeah.
Test of his management today.
I wonder whether there'll be an apology behind closed doors. I wouldn't expect a public one, but there might be a concession from Nigel Clough behind the scenes to say, look, son, heat at the moment, I probably overstepped it there. You know, I think you've got to look after the player. He's a new signing. Like Sam said, he has played him out of position and he's absolutely thrown him under the bus. And the accusation that he didn't really try because it was his mate is a serious one. So I think if I'm Elliot Hewitt, even though I'm new to the club, I don't know the manager that well, I think I am knocking on the door and saying, look, can we have a chat? Can we have a chat? Because I want to get things off my chest. That's not the case. Like, nothing to do with being mates. I just had a bad game. It happens, and maybe then Nigel would sort of admit, yeah, I went too far there. I think it's a slightly red miss moment, and I'm surprised because Nigel Clough's obviously been around the block. He knows the score, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I remember the similar situation last season with Ian Everett at Bolton when he had a go at his goalkeeper, told him to man up for not being able to kind of handle criticism, which was obviously a pretty poor thing to say. And he did end up apologising, and Billy Crennan's back at Fleetwood now anyway, so I suppose it didn't really make much of a difference in the grand scheme of things. But yeah, as Sam said, I mean, if you were that player, you probably wouldn't want to hang around much longer, because from that moment on, you'd probably think, well, it doesn't matter what I do because the manager's already kind of made up his mind on my professional credibility. So it's probably really difficult to then feel like you're constantly fighting to win back his love and appreciation. I mean, it just sounds exhausting.
Can I just say, on that last winning goal, what on earth was the goalkeeper doing? And why has he started screaming at his defence? And what is the left back doing as well? So yeah, blame Hewitt all you like, but I think there was a catalogue of errors there. The main one, the goalkeeper, is genius. I know he's a young lad on loan from Man United, but I mean, the shot is pretty, it's catchable. And he's got to push it away from the goal, and he pushes it straight to Cook, and then he starts lambasting everyone. It's classic. So yeah, I think there's a few of those in the back line at Mansfield that need to take a look at themselves. And I think that's maybe, you know, in reflection of the weekend, where they're going to come up a little bit short. Yeah, they always had good attacking players, but what about cementing back there first? That would be the first thing that I'd do if I went into Mansfield, not concede in a League Two season.
Do you know what? I think these are going to be two of the most entertaining teams in the division, not just because they served up a 3-2 here. Sam's been talking about Mansfield's adventurous lineup, which is a fact. And I saw Bradford at Forest recently and they put out their first team in the game and they were really dangerous going forward. Loads of options. Angle, who's injured, was terrific, but they got Vernon, Gilead, Callum Cook, Andy Cook. That's really good for League Two. But at the back, they look like they can give you a goal. So yeah, I think Mansfield and Bradford will be entertaining, and I think they'll be up there. I think they'll both be there or thereabouts.
Yeah, Bradford's still unbeaten, 9 goals in their last 3 games, and they've won all of those. Right then, do you fancy some Yammo?
Well, it's no good him getting a brace that we ain't defending the other end, so that's a stupid question, but you're right, yeah.
Classic Yammo, that. Forest Green Rovers 6, Crawley 3. feels like one of the lesser spotted scores in the wide, wide world of football. Nicky Cadden with a hat trick. Forest Green Rovers, top and perfect. So let's start with them, Flo. They look great. I mean, I'm not just talking about the kit that they've had for two seasons in a row now. Unheard of. Sustainable. But yeah, looking fantastic under newish manager Rob Edwards and kind of everything that Crawley weren't on the day.
Yeah, they look brilliant and they look like they're going to absolutely boss the division this season. And I thought I was quite surprised actually, because I feel like it was one of the few times that Yems actually gave credit to the opposition rather than just blamed his own players, which is kind of shocking from him. But yeah, he admitted that he thought they could have scored 10 and he thinks there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to concede 6 or even more there this season. So yeah, they just look unstoppable. And I think there's a really positive energy about the place and you can't underestimate how much that changes things. I can't remember who it was, but there was someone who was a previous press officer under Mark Cooper. And I remember when Cooper left, he put a tweet out basically saying, you know, how tough it was to work with him and how much he didn't enjoy it. And I think you can tell the difference now, because I think there is a general lift about the place. And I think it feeds into kind of every corner and every bit of the staff as well. And I think, you know, they're going to have a really good season.
Do you agree with that, Adrian? FGR looking good to go up?
They look good, don't they? Yeah. Look, if you've got Ebu Adams behind Matt Stevens and Jamil Matt, and they're all in good form, that's powerful. Especially when you've got the ammunition coming in from the flanks. And I think that was probably the story of this game. Nicky Cadden, obviously, with a hat trick from wing back. Kane Wilson on the other side. They just ran amok. And it's no better feeling. Because obviously, I was a wide man and I had quite a lot of games at wing back and was really uncomfortable when we were defending. But when we were on the front foot and when I was being given the ball for fun, having the wing to yourself, and knowing that you've got the beating of your man, it's just such a good feeling as a winger or a wing back. And they were in that zone in this game. And boy, did they make hay. It was, I mean, from Crawley's point of view, that they had a stinker in the fullback positions. But yeah, well played, Forest Green. And yeah, you've got to admire what the manager's doing, Rob Edwards. They're passing it well, but not for the sake of it. There's always a bit of a purpose to it. It's a good tempo. And I did read that his background was as an in-possession coach at the FA. I don't know if Sam's ever come across this, because Sam's obviously more recently retired than me. But I just didn't realise that these days you've got an in-possession coach and he's brought in as his number two the out-of-possession coach that he worked with the England under-16s. Kind of makes sense that you specialise and that you become a real expert in each field. But yeah, it's just something that just wasn't around in my day. You, Sam, or not?
No, it sounds like a funky way of saying a defensive coach and an attacking coach.
There's coaches for everything, right?
Makes complete sense. No, I think at St Mirren we had a guy whose name escapes me, Austin McPhee.
Good name.
Who's had some brilliant...
I know his nanny, yeah.
Who's had some incredible jobs. He was the Northern Ireland assistant. I saw him, he was the Hearts assistant manager, and he was somewhere, he's in England now, but he came in and used to do very detailed analysis of the opposition, and we'd work on selective little set pieces, and he'd come in on a Friday and just do a little bit and maybe go for a little bit of pattern of play as well. You know, the manager would just allow him to take it. And he was an integral part of the season we won the League Cup and gone on, as I say, to have some really good jobs in a varied coaching career. So it's something I experienced towards the tail end. And yeah, I mean, Edwards looks to be the business at the moment, doesn't he? You couldn't get two more contrasting post-match interviews. I mean, he looks like he's about to walk onto a catwalk. He does. And old John with his arms folded. It was glorious. Someone do that, please. I'd like a gif of that.
On the in and out thing, I know I'd rather be an in-possession coach than out-of-possession coach. Because look, the in-possession coach, when you're scoring goals, you get all the glory. If you're not scoring, it's okay, you might get a little bit of flack, but it's not as bad. Out-of-possession coach and it goes wrong, it's just all eyes on you, isn't it? I wouldn't want that gig. No, not for me.
Let's round off this ACCA then. Who have you picked from the EFL Cup ties ahead, Clarkie?
two of the most entertaining teams in the EFL go head to head. It is Flo and Sam's Queen's Park Rangers against Oxford. They love going forward and they don't love defending quite as much, both teams. And seeing as it's a cup tie, I reckon they're going to go for it. So QPR, Oxford, over 2.5 goals, please.
Rob Dickey hat-trick.
We'll get the odds on all those things shortly. Sam, what's your pick?
I'm going for the other two most attacking teams in the Football League, the football pyramid now, sorry. Norwich City against Bournemouth. My thought process there is wounded animal, getting written off. Norwich already, yeah, could enjoy tomorrow night against Bournemouth for a free scoring in the Championship. And if it goes the other way and Scott Parker says, you know what, I'm playing my under-18s, my under-23s, yeah, Norwich could fill their boots that way as well. So I think there'll be goals. Two attacking teams.
Wounded canaries cherry-picking. Abby, let's get some odds on those bets then, please.
Yeah, so both of these events are likely to happen, according to Paddy Power. Let's start at the Kai and Prince Foundation Stadium, where it's QPR, Oxford, over 2.5 goals, 17-20. That's going to happen. And over at Carrow Road, it is 4-5 for over 2.5 goals. If we look at the match stats themselves, we will see that, again, both of the higher-ranked teams are the favourites here. So Norwich, 17-20, Bournemouth, 16-5. And if I scroll down a bit further, we'll find QPR are 5-6 with Oxford, 3-1.
I feel like whenever I come on this podcast, I got to pick something that drives our acca up, because everyone always goes with the favourites. And I'm over here trying to actually win us some money, guys. Come on.
Well, two things on that. Number one, we've not actually won one. And number two.
We did
two.
Once.
No, we did. We did. Yeah. We did.
Well, not this
Sam,
season.
Sam was on it.
I want some money.
Sam cashed it in.
And two, if you put £1 on this bet, then you'll be handed back £43 in return, because this acca is a whopping 43-1.
Huge.
Yeah, I mean, it'll happen one week this season. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. Odds are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. And when the fun stops, stop. Okay, just about done for today. Before we sign off, in honour of Yemo answering a question with, that's a stupid question, but you're right. Let's each ask a stupid question. Clarky, you were keen on this, so you can go first.
Well, yeah, I'm good at asking stupid questions. And I'm going to ask you, this might be a stupid question, but would the EFL Cup, the Carabao Cup, would it be better if it was an early kickoff competition, a family-friendly compo, 5 p.m, 6 p.m. kickoffs? Get the kids in. It's all about getting the next generation through the door, isn't it? No one wants to go to these Carabao Cup games anyway, or hardly anyone does. This could be the opportunity. Fivers, tennis for a ticket, 5 or 6 o'clock kickoff. Times have changed. No one works 9 to 5 anymore. Flexible working, here to stay. I think, is it a stupid question to ask, should the EFL Cup rebrand as a family-friendly 5 or 6 o'clock KO competition?
The most sensible thing you've ever said. I think you grasped this little segment I have.
I sadly still think, though, it's not the timings that are stopping people going to watch, Sheffield United, Derby County tomorrow night. I don't think it's the timings that are preventing people.
But I
think it's the fact that, you know, like Sam said, that you might be paying Fiverr to go watch the under-18s, which actually, you know, in the grand scheme of things, if you really love your club, that's not the end of the world, because you're going to get to know some new names and faces. But if you're 10 years old and you absolutely love football, you want to see the bigger names on the team sheet and you don't really care who's playing in the under-18s.
Yeah. As a parent, I wouldn't take my kid to a 8 o'clock kickoff. Just wouldn't entertain it. But I would take them to a tea time kickoff, even if they were quite young, and that's when they can get the bug. And that's where you're getting the next generation through the door. I just think that the time is right maybe to dispense with, even though we're out of lockdown now, maybe the time's come to dispense with it always being 7:45 or 8 o'clock. Just chucking it out there.
But I mean, it's worth a go.
Far too sensible for ask a stupid question. Sam, you can pull this back.
Well, my response to stupid questions always, does a one-legged duck swim in circles? Always has been, always will be. And I've scribbled down.
Does it?
I think so. Does it?
Yeah, I'd imagine so. And I think that's the thought process behind the line. Matt, anyway. And okay, yeah, I've scribbled fine. Down, really don't want to play this. what's Neil Warnock's problem with referees? Or insert another managerial title in there. Steve Evans would work as well.
Mine was similar to your first one, Sam. Do dogs that have got jobs get jealous of pets? You know, they just get to lounge around all day. But if you're a working dog, you've got to do some graft. Help me, Flo. Come up with something worse than that.
I'm sweating.
Well, I had two, actually. One was kind of a bit more kind of method role play thing where I was asking a question to Yems, but I'm going to bin that one because I feel like we're not ready. No one's in the right headspace for that. So my question is just, is green your favourite colour, John? I'd love to know. And that's it.
Yeah, I wonder what his response to that. I keep telling people, green is not my favourite colour. I thought. Anyway, he might be coming on soon, so we better stop talking about him in this way.
You can ask him if you've ever seen Uncut Gems. Gems. Is it Gems? Yeah, it is.
That'll do us for today. Many thanks to Flo, to Adrian and to Sam. Sam will be back with me on Thursday. We'll have JB McEnough back then as well, so that'll be fun, and possibly a Yemo TBC. Until then, though, thanks for joining us today. We'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and keep up to date with everything Totally by heading to @thetotallyshow on Twitter and on Insta. Find out the latest subscription offers by going to theathletic.com/leagueshow. The Totally Football League Show is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.